This program is a paid commercial announcement from Jacob Media Partners and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management.
Welcome to Your Valuable Home, the show that's about education for homeowners and residential real estate investors, because educated buyers make smart choices on home purchases and improvements. I'm contractor Kevin Kennedy, host of Your Valuable Home.
Hi, and I'm Ron Milk, producer, co-host, and homeowner advocate. If you're a homeowner or have investment real estate, we've got your back.
You'll learn how to choose a contractor, get and compare estimates, check quality construction, and avoid huge upfront payments. We'll share home improvement trends, projects in the works, and homeowner horror stories.
We interview experts from across the country about everything from new building products, homeowners insurance, leveraging home equity, what's hot in real estate, which products make for an unhealthy home, and more.
Your Value of Home airs Sundays at 6 p.m. thanks to Tom Adams Windows and Carpets, with four locations in Churchville, Southampton and Doylestown, and Whitehall in the Lehigh Valley.
Tom Adams is the friendly, family-owned place known for award-winning installation and customer service and a wide selection of windows, doors, flooring, siding, and much more. Tom Adams has been satisfying customers throughout the region for 64 years. Okay, Kev, what time is it?
Time to start the show.
You got it.
WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia.
A radio.com station. Now, from the Malamud and Associates Law Studios.
Welcome home to Your Valuable Home with Kevin Kennedy and Ron Milk. Presented by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. If you own a home, this show's for you.
And I want to thank our listeners back for another great show we're going to be doing this today. And I want to give a couple shout-outs to one of our listeners that just recently got my hair cut. And I told her I'd give a shout-out because she's always listened to the show. To the Barber House in Richboro.
Too,
yeah, they. You know, I tell you, it's great when you have the listeners and you walk in and you hear your show playing. It's great. So I wanted to give a shout-out to the Richboro Barber House for doing such a great job and listening to the show. But we are going to get into the replay, but we have a guest studio.
We have a recurring guest.
Yes,
right? She's a friend of Your Valuable Home. She does great work. And what's her name?
Monica Wright has been in the studio several times. We got to be pretty friendly over times of, I guess, meeting out some of the things that you do. And I tell you, when you meet people that just put so much time into a community and you are the staple of your community, it's been several times I've been out to some of the things you do, some of the activities of bringing the community together. And one of them was one of the properties that you had fixed up.
Yes.
And I believe your daughter did most of the work too, right?
Yes, that's right. I do a lot of work in the community. Besides being a realtor, a USDA vendor at the summer lunch program, I have a community group that bought an investment property in West Philadelphia.
Now, what's the name of that, Monica? What's the name of the group?
Okay, it's called Black Communities Action Committee. But it's a diverse group of people. We got people from every walk of life that are involved. We put our money together. We bought an investment property in West Philly. It's probably worth about $90,000, and we got it for zero.
Zero.
Yes, it was.
I think that's a bargain. Along with me the next time.
It was an out of town heir, and she had to go back home, and so she just handed over the keys, and the house had squatters. It was tax delinquent. And so we worked on it for a couple of years, and now it's free and clear.
But you had to pay the back taxes, right?
We paid $16,000 in back taxes.
But that was the carrying charge for the place, right?
That's right.
You got the rest of it for free.
Yep.
So how much time? I that was the same property I was at last year, right?
That's right.
So there was a lot of work that was put into that. So how much, I mean, in your estimation, time, labor that you had to put out of your pocket to get to that point?
It's about 65% done. The second floor is completely drywalled, and I'd say about $40,000 went into it.
So you're about a little under $60,000 for a $90,000 property right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's what people need to understand, is that when you find those deals, it just makes it a lot easier than for that managing the cash flow to get all this done.
Right.
So, and what was great was that your daughter did most of the work. Is that correct?
Yes, she did. She wouldn't listen to mom because I actually have a contractor I usually use. And she felt like she wanted to do it herself. So it was a great learning experience for her. And she's going to be sharing with a lot of people in the group what she went through, good and bad.
What was it? I think there was a few horror stories in the beginning, wasn't there?
She,
yeah, when I
She thought she could pick up workers in the parking lot of the she thought she could just go to a home repair place and pick up.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
It didn't. She wasted about her first $3,000, and the person disappeared and left two of his workers who we had to feed because they were hungry.
So, I remember that story because the drywall looks like the spackle was put on with a bucket of a backhoe. It was so much spackle on there. There was just no way to get it out. But also the drywall wasn't secured properly.
That's right.
There was only a few screws and it wasn't ever glued.
That's right.
So I was more worried about that drywall coming down and falling on somebody. So that was my
concern.
It was
never screwed in?
No, there was a lot of issues.
So it was just glued?
No, it just had a few nails in it, but the joists underneath were still had issues. There were too long of spans. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough screws in it from the beginning. And when you have a drywall that's put up, the code today, they do require a lot more screws in a drywall check. Mm-hmm. But it's not so much the screws or nails. It's the glue along with the screws and nails that make that bond that you're never going to have a problem.
Right.
And you're also minimizing the nail pop, stuff like that. But we just don't want drywall falling down on somebody.
That's right.
But the drywall was awesome. It was a great job. And she's hired, by the way. I got plenty of work for her.
Your visit was her first very serious advice on what she should do. And from there, she started just absorbing YouTube. And she brought her brother and his friends in. And they started to go to places like Home Depot and get the right equipment. And she realized with the right equipment, you can pretty much get the job done.
Correct.
And, yes. So, it was exciting for her.
So is the upstairs completely done now?
All the drywall is done, the carpeting, the doors. She's about to tackle the bathroom and the kitchen.
Okay.
And she started on the kitchen. There's one more horror story that, you know, I think anybody who, even in innocence, wants to start to work on a house in Philadelphia, because some of our houses are 100 years old. She sometime had her children in there with her. And one tested elevated blood lead in his blood.
Yeah. Yeah, that house was built before 78, obviously, right? Yeah. Okay.
So now she doesn't have the children in there when she's doing the rehabbing. And then when it's finally finished, she's going to have a lead test.
It's also good to have air quality tests throughout the year. So once a year is not a bad idea. They're inexpensive just to know what you're breathing in.
Right.
So even I say with the water, because even though water is coming from the public, you don't know exactly where what's in it. Mm-hmm. So it's not a bad idea. They're inexpensive just to do to make sure you know what you're putting in your body.
Right.
So especially with the older homes, it's not a bad idea to have that. But when you were there, you had everything removed. You had a whole crew of people coming in and taking all that out. So that's a big part of getting like the lead and all the contaminants out of there from the beginning.
That's right.
Well, once you remove the drywall and it's been painted on, you're pretty much okay, right?
Well, it's more the trim. Is more the big the trim's the
one. Did you take the trim off too?
Yeah. Well, she removed everything.
Everything.
And did whole brand new drywall. Brand new trim. I got pictures of her when she was putting the windows in, so she trimmed her own windows. Yeah,
okay,
the error is just having the children in there while somebody's doing the work and dust and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Once you get everything encapsulated with new drywall, new paint, everything.
Yeah, sealing everything up. But the biggest getting it out of there. Usually that lead paint, you have to disturb it pretty heavily. Even when you rip it down, we were doing the readings on it, and we weren't getting much on there. Mm-hmm. But it's always safe to be sorry. Because you don't want to put anybody at risk. So by getting that stuff out of there, it's not a bad thing to have. And then you're done.
To get it out of there, wouldn't you? By law, you'd have to get it out of there, wouldn't you?
Only if you're disturbing it. If you're not doing anything with it, it's more for the painters that are doing the sanding on it and putting that real fine dust in the air. So any house was built from 1978.
I think the lead paint is a problem with pregnant women and kids.
Yeah,
because they bite into things and stuff like that. You know.
So the first floor, you said the kitchen. Is the kitchen halfway done or the cabinets in?
Well, the good thing is it's a very small kitchen. So she's taking everything out and she's drywalling.
She's drywalling.
Okay. Yeah.
We have pictures of all this. Can you send them to Kevin? We'll get them on the Facebook page?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll send the pictures. Okay. She did. The two bedrooms are gorgeous. They're smooth. They look professional.
They do. They really do. It looks good.
She did a good job.
Yeah.
We've got to get down there and take a look at it.
Yeah, I've been down there a couple times already
to
see. But it's amazing when you see transformation of homes from what they were to now, and especially that she did the work.
Yep.
It makes it a lot more enjoyable to see that work and the smile that put on her face when she, because that one picture she was in the, it was smiling, but she was actually, the drywall was up and she was actually working on it.
Right.
And that's when I said to you, hey, Monica, what's going on? Is she doing the work herself? And you're like, yeah, she's doing it herself. And that is, I love to hear that.
Yeah.
Because really, you know what it does? It minimizes some of the horror stories if you know what you're doing, if you're that anxious to do it and do it right and take the time to either YouTube or call Mr. Contractor here to give me a call if you need any advice. Yeah, that's what it's all about, just doing the right job.
So, Monica, we're down to about a minute and a half right now. Do you have another project in the planning stages?
We have a project we're looking on.
Aha, okay.
But we really had to educate ourselves because the point is, in order to help people like my daughter and people who are a part of my group, I think we have to focus on creating a social enterprise. So we're not looking for the government to do it.
Right.
And private industry isn't going to do it because it's not as profitable. So there's that in-between spot of social enterprise. How do you get people to create a sustainable business that meets their need?
Okay. Yeah. You might look at Pew, too. Do you know Pew?
Yes.
Organization?
Mm-hmm.
Might look at Pew because they do invest in a lot of local stuff in Philadelphia. I mean, they're all over the world, but they really focus on Philadelphia. So I'd give them a ring.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to get
sounds
you.
Like it's be right up their alley.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd like to get further into that. We'll get you back on when the kitchen's done, and then we can talk a little bit more on how those businesses could work and what really could do for the city, because you've been a great staple to the whole community. Every time I go down there, everybody looks up to you, and that's a great thing to see all that. So, but I'm glad I got you back on now, the era that we're here on the
good seeing you again.
And we got to have you back on.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for listening again on Your Valuable Home on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Tonight's edition of Your Valuable Home is brought to you by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets.
Tom Adams Windows and Carpets have been awarded by Window and Door Magazine for the nation's best installation company and customer service for two of the past 3 years. Contact Tom Adams for all your window, door, and flooring needs. Find out why Tom Adams Windows and Carpets wins awards each and every year for superior installation and customer service. Schedule a free in-home estimate and see why your home deserves Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. You'll save a whole bunch of money, too. Visit TomAdamsWC.com.
Looking for a home improvement contractor? Look at experience. We've got 30 years under the same name. Very unusual in this business. Look at their strengths. We excel at indoor projects like kitchens and baths, outdoor projects like siding, windows, and doors, even entire additions. We've introduced products for national manufacturers and won awards for our work. Look at who does the work. With VSP, the owner and the foreman of 23 years are always part of the team. Look for fair terms. VSP asks for no more money down than the law allows in this area. Our pricing is never the lowest and usually not the highest. We deliver great value for the money. Looking for a home improvement contractor who will produce what they promise? Look to VSP Home Remodeling. Call Kevin Kennedy at 215-364-3286 or email him at vsphome@verizon.net.
Now back to Your Valuable Home, presented by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. If you have a question about a home project for our host, Kevin Kennedy, call him directly, 215-364-3286.
Thank you, everybody. Back to Your Valuable Home on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. And Ron, now it's time for the illustrious horror story.
What do we got? What do we got?
This was when somebody calls you up and says, hey, listen, I'm getting some work done, and I need some help. I'm like, well, tell me what the problem is. She said, well, my door had failed, and we had figured out the problem. I said, well, what do you mean the door had failed? She said the sill was collapsing. I said, I don't know. What are you talking about? Your sill collapsed. She said, it really bows down pretty heavy. And I said, well, was
something wrong underneath there, right?
Yeah, she said it started almost immediately. I called the guys back. They threw some caulking under there, but I really didn't figure it out. But we're having some floor work done, and they found that they took out the door, put the new door in, and all the subflooring underneath was rotted from the door before, and they never replaced it.
Well, they must have known that when they put the new door.
Absolutely, yeah. They'd known. Okay. But you know, how do I fix it? I said, it's very simple. You got to pull the whole door out. So wherever the guys are putting in the floor, they can fix up to that point if you want to do it later. But that the only way to fix that is to pull everything out.
Yeah.
The best part was, she said, well, listen, they when they came back, the caulking they were talking about, well, they took a picture and sent it to me. It was spray foam. They put spray foam under it thinking that was going to hold. Now, you got these big companies. I love what everybody's advertising on these companies. Hey, these guys are great. They're my contractor. They do a great job. No. Now, I am getting tired of seeing this. that every job that I look at, it's just substrate inferior work that should be done better. If you have a door that's
a matter of, they just don't care. I mean, they couldn't possibly believe that that would have solved the problem.
This is one of the big name companies you hear all over the radio advertising. They're all over the place. But this is the work they did. And I said, you ought to go back to them, tell them, hey, this is the problem. That whole thing should be completely ripped out and redone. They should be doing something for you because you shouldn't be covering the rot. And it was definitely not just happened. It was the old rot because when they were coming back, you can see the spray foam filled around the rotted wood. That's the picture I seen. There was a big area there where it was completely sprayed around it. So I don't know what part of the area she is. I said, listen, I don't want to know. I don't want any names. I just want to tell you that should have been done from the beginning. That's a disgrace for that contractor to do that, or the sub who they sent out. But unbelievable that they put a brand new door in and went through.
Was it an expensive door?
Oh, yeah. She said it was a couple $1,000s she spent.
Wow.
On the door. But, you know, it's tough when a flooring.
Well, it didn't hurt the door. I mean, they just have to pull it out again, right?
Yeah, but still what can happen is that sill, when you keep walking on it, that sill has to be stable because that sill attached to that is the threshold. That threshold then is most likely adjustable, and that's something that can be taken in consideration. But that adjustability, that can start pushing on the door bottom, so the performance of your door is not going to work so well.
Well, not only that, but you got, if it's sagging, you got extra weight coming down on the door too, right? It's pulling.
Well, yeah.
So you could throw it totally out of alignment, couldn't you?
Yeah, but if you have that, you get a hard driving rain, that the seal's not working properly, it's going to start to leak.
You got water in your house.
And then second of all, I said, the thing that every door, especially over wood, when you have that step and you have all the rain that's coming in, when you notice that rot from before, that is the area where once the wood that meets that sill, I seen it rot and it just pours down below that. There should have been rubber or some type of sill pan.
Yeah, there's a reason why that happened in the first place.
Right, and it's normal. Everyone says, hey, the stucco problem. Well, it's not a stucco problem. It's more the window problem and improper installation of the underlayment. If that door had the proper underlayment, now granted, 30 years ago, it didn't have.
People didn't know what they know now.
Right. But why didn't they put it now? Everyone says, hey, how great they are, that they're getting this and this from all the advertising everybody's putting out. But it's not true. So I look at it as if you're advertising that you're that good of a job and you're going to do that great and your workmanship's impeccable. This was a disgrace that I seen. The pictures, I'm going to be posting them on Facebook, but it's just, I'm kind of getting tired of hearing it, that every contractor thinks they're good. You could have 50 guys, 75 trucks, until I authorize it, they're not good.
Well, let me ask you, sir, is putting in a new door considered structural of any attorney?
No, not at all.
So in other words, there's no inspection, there's no permit required, none of that stuff.
Only if you're changing the existing opening. If you have a door, a 3-0 door, which is 3 foot 0 inches.
Just slap one in the same place.
Windows and doors you don't need permits for unless you're changing the size of the opening, which then it goes into structure, your new header. So if you have a door and you want to put side lights on, you want to expand it, yeah, you have to get a permit for that because you're going to need a header system to be applied. So there's a carpenter.
Which would apply to a window too, right?
Yeah, if you're extending.
If you're changing the opening.
You're changing the opening size. But if you're just popping in, popping out. But that's one of the biggest problems today is the application of that window, that application of the door. You want to make sure that if it does go, if it does fail in 10, 15 years, that the underlayments, and I use the Tyvek Flex on my sills, the underlayments are in place. So if that water does get down there and the glue's properly installed. Now, here's one thing I tell you. When I talk to a lot of door guys that work for those companies, 99% of them get it wrong on where to put the sealant. So some of them said they do like a horseshoe. They go back and forth across the whole door. So you go to the front of it. Yeah, then we go a couple lines. I said, no. You don't want to do that. You want to put the rubber down and it goes to the back. Because what happens is you're trying to build a sill pan in. You don't put it in the front because if the door leaks towards the back.
Drain towards the back.
Yeah. It can't go out in the front. That's what you wanted to do because you're wrapping over either the underlayment or the tar paper or the felt or the Tyvek that's under there. So you've got to build it in the back. It goes thick in the back, a nice generous bead in the back. So when that moisture does happen to get through, or if it doesn't, if it's just moisture instead of water, it drains properly away from the house and not back into the house. Because how we tell people, you know, you can tell. If you have a hardwood floor, you'll see your flooring of the hardwood floor start to discolor.
Well, not only that, but it could cup too, right?
You could do a lot of things.
As soon as it cups, it's done.
Right. You got to pull it out, pull the new floorboards. Right. Yeah. So it gets to be a little bit more. But when you have rot, just to put the new door in over top of rot, it's going to cost more. Granted, you don't know. contractor doesn't know, but a good contractor should say, hey, listen, I know the rot's going to be in there, but I can cut all that out. Even if it goes underneath the flooring and your flooring company can replace it when you get to that part, but right under there, the 4.5 inches, you can cut that out, put some new subflooring in, build the sill pan, put your Tyvek rubber on and put it in without affecting if you're doing the floor at a later time. But you just don't, hey, you know what, I got to get in and out and I got to leave because I'm going out to the bar after and I'm just going to leave the rot there. Who cares? It's
okay,
not my
so
job.
Would you say, as a general rule of thumb, if somebody with an older house that was built like in the 60s or 70s has a new front door put in, should they check for that? Because chances are a lot of them were done wrong back in those days, correct?
Well, not necessarily.
They were done according to the way things were done back in those days.
How'd you maintain them? Did you put capping around it? Did you seal around them? Was your threshold in good shape? There's a lot of things you got to look at.
But that's what I'm saying. It should really be looked at if you're putting in a new door in a house like that, correct?
A house technically isn't maintenance-free. You've got to do your homework.
It's like anything. It's like brushing your teeth every day, right?
Right. Just because you have clean teeth.
You've got to take care of them.
Yeah, it's got to be done again. So that's one thing with the door. Doors and windows are really... areas where you need to address. Roofing, another area. Siding, I tell people, vinyl siding leaks. It's not waterproof. It's one thing, the big misconception. So when you really look at when you get roofing or you get doors, you just got to make sure from the beginning, prep. That prep has to be done correctly. And really it is. It's just making sure the subflooring that was in there is done correctly. And all it is just you put it over rot. But when you call the company out and they send their top guy to fix the issue, when he puts spray foam, well, spray foam's not structured. You're not going to be able to stand on spray foam, 1 inch of spray foam. You're going to fall right through it. But it's the same thing that's happening. They just didn't want to have to rip the whole door out and then fix it all. Well, it should have been done in the first place. So I told them they should own up to this. They should pull the door, fix the subflooring. If there's any structural damage to that sill from you stepping on it because you're pushing down on it, they should take full responsibility of that. So that plywood should have been done in the beginning, and you would have never had a problem. That door would last you 30 years from the beginning. And if it wasn't done correctly, this is the problem you're going to run into and you're going to be calling the show. But this was a big company. So with the big companies, you just figure, hey, I'm getting the right job.
They were in, out, got done, build.
No
right?
quality control. Yeah. Okay. And that's what we have
QC
to look for.
QC is a big problem across the board.
That's what it is. So if you have any other questions or concerns, if you're getting anything done, give me a call and I can at least walk you through it with your contractor to make sure that you're getting the right job. And you're listening to Your Valuable Home.
And stick with us. We got a great college coming up.
That's it on 1210 WPHD.
Tonight's edition of Your Valuable Home is brought to you by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets.
Tom Adams Windows and Carpets have been awarded by Window and Door Magazine for the nation's best installation company and customer service for 2 of the past 3 years. Contact Tom Adams for all your window, door, and flooring needs. Find out why Tom Adams Windows and Carpets wins awards each and every year for superior installation and customer service. Schedule a free in-home estimate and see why your home deserves Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. You'll save a whole bunch of money, too. Visit TomAdamsWC.com.
Welcome home. This is Your Valuable Home, presented by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets.
And thanks, everybody, for coming back to Your Valuable Home. Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. And now it's time for the college. Ron, what do you got going on?
We got a really interesting one today. And any of our listeners who are in the market for new furniture, you know, and everybody is all the time, you know, buying new furniture, they should get out a pen and paper. And here's why. And take notes as we interview our next guest, Susan Inglis. Susan, how are you?
Just fine, thank you. So pleased to be here with you today,
and
Ron.
We're pleased to have you. And Susan is Executive Director of the Sustainable Furnishings Council. They're based in North Carolina, which is the furniture capital of the U.S. Did I get that right?
That's right.
Okay, and the council deals with all sorts of issues, including harmful chemicals in furniture fabric, something probably most people don't even think about, okay? What's that couch you're buying got in it? So we're going to get right into it. And Susan, what are the goals of your organization?
Well, Ron, the goals of Sustainable Furnishings Council include helping consumers find the more environmentally safe furnishings that they would prefer and helping furnishings companies of all kinds reduce environmental footprint so that there is more of this environmentally safe furniture that we would prefer available for all tastes and at all price points.
Okay, your organization had some interesting beginnings, and explain that in your connection to High Point, North Carolina, which is the epicenter of the capital of furniture in the United States, right?
It is. It is. The International Home Furnishings Market takes place in High Point, North Carolina twice a year, and furniture of all kinds is bought and sold there, and that's how the furniture gets into the furniture store on Main Street in your town. And our organization started in the showroom of Jerry Cooklin, who had a furniture business there. He was making furniture in Peru and gathered us at his showroom in 2006 to talk about the idea of starting this organization. He had had an epiphany and greened up his operations, starting with choosing the wood he was using very carefully. He wanted to ensure that in Peru, where he was manufacturing, he was not contributing to deforestation. And that's a place where there's a problem with deforestation. So he went to great lengths to ensure that he was getting good wood and empowering indigenous communities to manage forests well and provide him with even more good wood.
Well, anything that's coming out, any wood that's coming out of South America is there's a deforestation problem. It's in the Amazon, Peru, probably other places too, right?
That's true. That's true. And so all of us as consumers should think about where the wood is coming from. And the salesperson where you are shopping for furniture should be able to answer your questions about what kind of wood is it and how you can be assured that it's not contributing to deforestation. If it's North American wood, you're in pretty good shape. But if it is South American wood or African wood, you want to know that it's been certified by a third party like Forest Stewardship Council to know that it's coming from well-managed forests.
That's very, very interesting point. So if you're into conservation and sustainability, in addition to just buying good furniture, you ought to look at that, you know, and be aware
right.
of that. Okay.
That's right. And in fact, we all need healthy forests, whether you're consciously concerned about conservation of forest environments. All of us need those forests to keep the air in the whole world clean.
Yeah, anything that happens in the Amazon is probably going to affect big swaths of the world, right?
That's right.
Okay. So how did you get involved in all this?
Well, in 2006, when the conversation to start the organization was announced, I was working in the residential furnishings industry with artisans, some of them in South America, helping put their skills and products in new markets, including into the residential furnishings market. And that I've been doing for years. My little business is called From the Mountain, and it barely exists anymore. It pretty much got eclipsed by my work with Sustainable Furnishings Council. But we did make a difference in communities in about 38 countries as we helped them get their skills and products to new markets. And so I'm my ears perked up when I heard there was going to be a conversation to start this organization, Sustainable Furnishings Council, and I showed up at that first meeting and got involved.
And here we are. Here we are on the
radio.
That's
right. That's
a great
right.
thing to be involved in.
Yeah.
Now, you have these sustainability standards that you follow. How did that all come about?
Yes, the first thing we needed to do when we decided to form an organization to encourage best practices for sustainability in the residential furnishings industry was we had to define those best practices. So we've made a list of about 24 practices, and we also set standards for recognizing what is really good implementation of each of those practices. We did this by forming a committee of people who are professionals in the industry and who also are professionals in the sustainability world. We had excellent help at the beginning and ongoingly now still from World Wildlife Fund and Rainforest Alliance, and a co-founder of the U.S. Green Building Council also helped get us started. So they provided crucial guidance in the structure of our standards.
Susan, how long has the council been based when you started the whole council?
We started in 2006 with that initial meeting. That was in September of 2006. By March of 2007, we were fully incorporated and had 43 member companies. And by the end of that year, we had 100 members. And now we have nearly 400 member companies that are involved in the industry in various ways.
Yes, I'm thinking now more of these big companies that everybody goes to, these big furnishing stores around here. So I'm sure the practice now is more sustainable, where they're involved more about knowing where that the wood's coming from.
That's right.
Yeah, thanks
that's
to the efforts of Susan and her.
Yeah, there's some pretty good efforts there. Yeah, you're right about the deforestation.
Okay. So what's the it's made of initiative that you've got going on? Is that that's
this
everything we're talking about here?
Initiative's very important. Yes, the initiative is called What's It Made Of because it is to encourage us to ask that question. Our goals are to encourage transparency in these very complex supply chains we have in the home furnishings industry, and also to stimulate innovation towards the elimination of the harmful chemicals that are most commonly found in furnishings, which, as you mentioned, often occur in textiles, for instance. But they occur in different parts of manufacture of different kinds of furnishings. There are five harmful classes of chemicals that are commonly used in our industry, and they are VOCs, volatile organic
VOCs,
compounds,
yep. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, like formaldehyde,
yep.
which has a lot of responsibility for polluting indoor environments and especially harming people who have asthma or other respiratory illnesses. So that's one. Another one is the flame retardant chemicals, about which there's been a lot of press recently, as we have come to realize that they're not very effective for retarding flame, actually, and they are harmful to human health and to other life on the planet, being linked to cancer and other diseases. Another one of these classes of chemicals is the fluorinated stain treatments, which is what makes many of our performance fabrics perform. So when you are choosing a sofa that you can spill on with impunity, you might be choosing one that has been treated with chemicals that are linked to harmful health effects for humans. Most famously, there are PFAS chemicals that pollute waterways and that are making people sick who have never bought a couch, also are found in the bodies of animals all over the planet.
Now, a question for you, selfish question.
Yeah.
I bought a couch about a year ago with performance fabric, okay? And the reason I did is what you just mentioned. You can clean it up.
Yeah.
But also, it was supposed to be somewhat, sun impervious, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, how do I find it? Go back to the place where I bought it, the retailer I bought it, and just confirm what's in it?
Yes, you should be able to go back to where you bought it and ask them what it's made of. And it's never too late to ask. It's going to be interesting for you to know what it's made of. We'd like to know.
I'd like to know myself if you're buying furniture.
It'll last for a long time, and you'll choose whether to keep it once you learn what it's made of.
Well, doesn't California have really high standards with some of these products that they're not to be applied to, certain like mattresses and furniture? Their standards are a little bit stricter in California. Is that correct?
They are. They are real leaders in recognizing that of the tens of thousands of chemicals used for the range of consumer products, many of them are harmful to human health and other life on the planet. And so California has a Proposition 65, which requires that when a product contains something that California knows is carcinogenic or an endocrine disruptor, it has to be labeled. And so for furniture, it might be labeled because of any of these five harmful chemicals that we're addressing with the What's It Made Of initiative. Now, that doesn't mean that any or all five of them are in every item that is labeled with a Prop 65 label, but it means that a harmful chemical might be in that product, and you should ask about it.
That's a great thing. Listen, I want to get more into this chemical that's put in there.
Yeah, so I got a couple of questions about that myself. So,
Susan, hang tight here, and you're listening to Your Valuable Home on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Stick with us.
Tonight's edition of Your Valuable Home is brought to you by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets.
Tom Adams Windows and Carpets have been awarded by Window and Door Magazine for the nation's best installation company and customer service for two of the past 3 years. Contact Tom Adams for all your window, door, and flooring needs. Find out why Tom Adams Windows and Carpets wins awards each and every year for superior installation and customer service. Schedule a free in-home estimate and see why your home deserves Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. You'll save a whole bunch of money, too. Visit TomAdamsWC.com.
Looking for a home improvement contractor? Look at experience. We've got 30 years under the same name. Very unusual in this business. Look at their strengths. We excel at indoor projects like kitchens and baths, outdoor projects like siding, windows, and doors, even entire additions. We've introduced products for national manufacturers and won awards for our work. Look at who does the work. With VSP, the owner and the foreman of 23 years are always part of the team. Look for fair terms. VSP asks for no more money down than the law allows in this area. Our pricing is never the lowest and usually not the highest. We deliver great value for the money. Looking for a home improvement contractor who will produce what they promise? Look to VSP Home Remodeling. Call Kevin Kennedy at 215-364-3286 or email him at vsphome@verizon.net.
If you're starting a home project, let Your Valuable Home help you avoid the pitfalls of a bad decision. Now back to Ron Milk and contractor Kevin Kennedy.
Yes, you're listening to Your Valuable Home on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So we still, Susan, on the phone to talk more about a lot of furniture, but what really shocked me was the chemicals. There's a lot in there that I'd like to just go over a little bit more so our listeners know what they're getting into when they're buying furniture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I've got a question. Kevin's giving me the go-ahead signal here. I've got a question.
That's a first down signal.
And I had a personal experience with this. The chemicals that you're talking about, would they be harmful to a person with a compromised immune system? And that could be a lot of different people. Could be a rheumatic disease, could be whatever.
Exactly. Yes, volatile organic compounds in general are a problem for people with a compromised immune system. It's true. Yeah.
So you could be buying a piece of furniture unless you check with and find out what's in it, what's in the fabric. Mm-hmm. You could be buying a piece of furniture if you've got a condition like that to be doing you harm on a daily basis,
correct? It's true. It's true. Hmm. And the harm that any of these chemicals does is a matter of exposure. And if a person is perfectly healthy and in the prime of life, then they can tolerate more exposure than somebody who has an immune system problem or is very young or is very old. And so it is a matter of the harmful chemicals in the environment, but also a matter of the level of exposure. And that's going to be different for different people.
Yeah.
So we're saying some of this chemical has to be in some of the furniture for that resistance, like spilling of anything on it. Something's got to be in there.
That's right. But it is not the only way that you could make a fabric resist spills. It is those highly fluorinated chemicals. They are the most common way of making a fabric perform in most robustly. But it's not the only way. And so you could make it more stain resistant by making it out of a polypropylene, for instance. That would not resist all oils and all stains, but it would resist some. And you could also simply learn to wash your fabrics carefully. And so a slip cover on a sofa for the period when the children are little and are more likely to spill things, a slip cover that you can take off and throw in the washing machine, can be a very good solution.
Well, I saw that in the commercial. They had that new couch that the people were actually pulling it off and rearranging it and then putting the slip cover in the washing machine. Did you see that? I was just on a little while ago.
I missed that one.
Yeah, I guess it makes it a little bit easier instead of going back to the way my grandmother did it, who actually put the plastic on everything. You know, when you wake up and your face still sticks to it. You know, not many people know what the slip cover is, but for people my age, and I'm sure Ron's age, know that the plastic was widely used back then. But I would like to know, I mean, besides using milk crates to use for a couch, something that I know is going to be able to wash up, I would like to know what I'm purchasing. So all of our listeners should really understand when you're looking for furniture, you should be asking these questions.
Well, I got an interesting question coming up, and Susan, I think, is going to have an interesting answer to this because it's on our website. So how do you recognize a safe, environmentally friendly furniture retailer? I think you've got a list of them on your site, don't you?
We do have. The companies that have joined Sustainable Furnishings Council have committed to helping to sustain a healthy future, and they will probably be displaying the Sustainable Furnishings Council member seal in the window of their store, but they're all listed at sustainablefurnishings.org. And I have to tell you that there are other companies that could be listed there. They deserve to be listed there, but that is what I suggest consumers do first when they're looking for a responsible retailer is look at sustainablefurnishings.org.
Okay, and you also have a wood furniture scorecard. How does that work?
Yes, and that's a very interesting and useful program. Because wood is a main ingredient in furniture, we are, in fact, the number three user of the wood resource in our industry, after the construction industry and after the paper production industry. What comes next is furniture. We use an awful lot of wood. So we have a large responsibility for halting deforestation, since we all need forests to be healthy. And so we have this scorecard that looks at the wood sourcing policies of retailers, looking at that retailer's information in the public domain and inquiring into, do they have a policy for sourcing their wood in such a way as to avoid deforestation? Is it a robust policy? Are they implementing it well? Are they doing other things to sustain a healthy future? Those are what is measured on the wood furniture scorecard. And we do plan to be released a new class of top scorers later in 2020. We started this project in 2018. With 57 companies, we did about 90 companies in 2019, and we will do more before the end of 2020.
So, in other words, if you're environmentally conscious and you want to protect your family as well, when you buy furniture, the place to go is, what's the name of the website again?
sustainablefurnishings.org.
Okay.
And when you arrive there, you can look for particular kinds of furniture. You can put in dining room or living room into the finder. You can also learn more about the wood that is used in that furniture by clicking on the wood furniture scorecard tab. And you can learn more about the harmful chemicals that might be in that furniture by clicking on the What's It Made Of tab.
All right, we're down to a two-minute warning here, Susan.
Okay.
What about, has sustainability become a mandate from consumers? Are they really conscious of it?
Yes, I'm so glad you're asking this, because we have been canvassing consumers for years to find out their level of concern about environmental issues and how much they are demanding solutions from the companies they do business with. So when we started asking these questions in 2008, about half of all furniture consumers were concerned about any sustainability issue we asked them about, from global warming to extinction of species to overcrowding landfills to quality of indoor air, et cetera. Half of people were worried about any of those issues. And now it is 98% of people, that is approximately all of us, that are worried about any of these issues we ask about. And further, we as consumers are acting out of our concern by doing such things as beginning to ask, what's it made of? Where is it made? How did it get to where I am? So we are asking more questions, and we are shopping with our values. We are looking for products that not only suit our taste and suit our budgets, but also suit our values. That is definitely something that's happening, and sustainability is a part of that.
Susan, yeah, that is, I tell you, it's a lot of good information. Yeah, we got to get going here. But yeah, Susan, the Executive Director of Sustainable Furnishing Council, that was a lot of great information.
And you do great work.
Thank you.
Yeah, something for me to look at, because I'll be buying furniture in the next couple months myself, so it's great for me to get a good insight on what we got to do. But I want to thank all of our listeners for listening to Your Valuable Home here. We had a great show, and we're hoping to be back next week. You're listening to Your Valuable Home on Talk Radio.
Take care. Thanks again, Susan.
Thanks for listening to Your Valuable Home, a Jacob Media production. If you're interested in learning more about the power of the radio hour, contact Joe Kraus at 267-261-3428. This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.